Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Alan Pittman, Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Administration and Chief Human Capital Officer at the VA. Also joining us in our conversation is Sully Thomas, Associate Partner in IBM's Human Capital Practice. Alan, you talked about your movement to a 10-year plan. So as you look at this horizon, what types of personnel challenges do you think the VA will face?
From a personnel challenge standpoint, if you're talking about human capital into the future, we have a huge challenge ahead of us. I've just very briefly talked about succession planning. Obviously, you have to ensure that you have a flow of candidates for employment. So that's absolutely crucial that we not only focus there, but also understand what we are about and the lines of business that we're going to support in the future. Again, mentioning our three administrations, if you know that BHA, Veterans Health Administration, is the largest component of our operating units and it is patient care oriented, then that tells you pretty much a focus that we would have in reference to that administration. Doctors, nurses, health care professionals, health care technicians. And we need to ensure that there's a constant flow. And we're taking steps to do that. We've developed, for example, we're trying to brand ourselves within the minority community. It's an unusual approach. Again, it's thinking outside the box. The private sector and the federal government typically goes after anyone that they can recruit, but the most overlooked segment of our society happens to be the minorities. And that speaks very, very clearly. I mean, if you look at underrepresentation within the government, that speaks to where we're not getting candidates of employment from. So why not become the brand within that minority community? I'll give you an example. We developed just recently and implemented in Puerto Rico a community prosperity partnership with one of the nation's largest Hispanic organizations, LULAC, and also the American GI Forum, which is a Hispanic veteran organization that's chartered by the federal government. And what the intent is to look 10 years into the future and see what our job requirements are based upon the lines of business, the skills necessary to support those, and turn right around and go into the Hispanic community through the storefronts that belong to American GI Forum and also LULAC. They're inviting us into their community. The problem with our recruiting strategies typically is we don't understand the culture. So by working with them, develop those strategies, and what we're doing is taking those job requirements into their youth development programs and developing that individual to where they're qualified for the job openings. The biggest barrier that we have is finding a qualified candidate for the job posting. So if we have a qualified candidate, that minimizes that barrier approach. Well, there's other approaches too. Nursing. Nursing shortages continue to happen. And it's not that there are not individuals that want to become nurses. The numbers are there. It's just that the nursing schools don't have the number of openings because they don't have enough instructors. So therefore, VA is taking another unique approach. The deputy suggested, again, thinking outside the box, why doesn't VA have a nursing school, a national nursing school? Well, we're looking into that so we can have people come to us. I also have been talking with the Surgeon Generals of the various military services, and they are very, very supportive of this. The allied healthcare professions, for example, the non-nurses, non-physicians, those that have made the actual decision to separate from the service, why can't we bring them in to our organization? Remember, we hire veterans, but also we're bringing in qualified individuals. If we had someone, for example, that was a hospital corpsman in the Navy that wants to come to VA and become a nurse, we have a program where they can actually come in. We'll send them to a nursing school. We'll pay them 100% of their salary while they're going to school. And then whenever they get out of school, then they will sign a contract with us for a number of years of service in order to pay us back for taking them through that process. But in talking with the military branches, they are wholeheartedly supportive of that. The one concern they have is that our program becomes so good that those individuals that were in the military that were on the border, I mean on the edge of making the decision whether staying in the military or leaving, that they may make the decision to leave and separate. So that's a concern we have, is making sure that we have the human capital for the future.
Along sort of the same lines, what challenges and adjustments do you foresee as a result of the ongoing operations in Iraq and Afghanistan?
There's a program that we have that's actually called Coming to Home to Work Initiative. And for those young men and women, the veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, the theaters, that have been severely wounded or disabled, they typically will go through a process of rehabilitation assessment. For example, at Walter Reed, or it could be Bethesda Naval, or it could be in San Diego, or it could be at Madigan in Seattle. There's a process they're going through where there's a determination being made as to whether they can stay in the service or, unfortunately, from their perspective, being discharged. And I will tell you, though, you ask them, they want to stay in the service. They want to stay. They actually want to go back to Afghanistan and Iraq. And it makes you so proud when you talk to them. But what we have is the Coming Home to Work initiative is actually a work is a compensated work initiative. What that means is while they're going through rehabilitation and being paid by their military branch, by the Department of Defense, we have them come to work for us for 17 hours a week. And our one commitment is, and the prop priority is, get them back for rehabilitation therapy. Any appointment they have, we'll get them back. But what we're trying to do is during this 17-hour-a-week process is to help them develop a new profession, a new occupation. And we started that program about 2.5 years ago. And we've since that period of time, we have hired on board with us, mostly in information technology actually, is about approximately 45 individuals. But we have more that's coming through the process itself. So we're trying to anticipate from an employment perspective those individuals coming back. From a network perspective, from a Veterans Health Administration standpoint, obviously we have healthcare needs also. And we're trying to adapt to that. And we're doing an extremely good job there, in particular when it comes to brain injury and spinal cord injuries. We actually have centers of excellence across the country, eight in number. And we're known now as a center of excellence for those severe injuries.
Alan, I want to talk a little bit about technologies that are used in the human resources area. There's a lot of talk about commercial best practices, and certainly you have an interesting perspective coming in from the private sector. What emerging technologies do you think hold the most promise for improving the federal human resource management?
Well, I really think that what we need into the future is really what we're trying to do now through the HR lines of business. However, take it a step further. We need to have an opportunity where we create a desktop management, human resources management approach for each manager and supervisor. If you look at the flexibility that we have by automating personnel files through the electronic official personnel file process under eGov and also the human resource information system under the HR lines of business, the intent is to create an icon sitting on that desktop, that computer desktop, that not only sits there with the other icons you may have like Word and et cetera, but to be able to tap into this icon that says HRIS. Now, through access rights to whatever applications may be within that human resources information system and also field rights, that supervisor, as I had mentioned to you earlier, we have a Form 52, which is a manual process on an employee change of status of some sort. Well, if that supervisor wants to initiate an action, then they can just tap that icon, go into a certain field of an application, fill out electronically that form, and also transmit it if it requires upline management approval to transmit it. Also has the learning management system that sits within it. For example, the individual development profiles of those employees that they supervise, what kind of training is necessary, what's necessary into the future. So as to create a desktop approach, that's absolutely essential for every manager in order to manage the workforce of tomorrow.
Alan, you have a tremendous passion for the business, and you've started your career in the private sector and have sort of had a variety of experiences. I'm curious, and I'd love to learn, for those folks that are out there possibly thinking about a career in public service, what advice could you give them to get started?
I think it's an honor to serve for the public, with the public, in any kind of opportunity that one may have, whether it's a federal government, state, local, could be the Peace Corps, could be the military. If one were to ask me 35 years ago what I would do for anyone coming out of high school, I'd highly recommend having a 2-year tour of duty in public service. And I'll say the Peace Corps again, or it could be the military. I happen to be one of those individuals coming out of a process where I was a little bit on the wild side, and I needed to have an understanding of a little bit more discipline in my life. And what I understood in the military as an example, and this happens in public service, it's not about I, it's about we. It's a team. You cannot move anything to an outcome unless you have others to help you and to be part of that team approach. And just by the mere fact that you know that you're giving back to your community in one form or another truly, truly excites me day in and day out. And some say this is a sacrifice. This is not a sacrifice. It's an honor.
Great. That is fantastic. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time. I do want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Sully and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country and our veterans.
Thank you very much. I, again, would just like to emphasize, if one has the opportunity for public service, please serve. I can't miss this opportunity to say something about Veterans Affairs, the Veterans Health Administration itself. If you've been reading anything about the VA over the course of the last 2 years, you now know that the Veterans Health Administration has the highest quality outcomes of any health care distributive system in the world. It's known for its quality care. What a change. And our secretary has a tendency, Secretary Nicholson has a tendency of saying this is the best story never told. And that's true. And we're taking an approach now to every opportunity we have, like I do now, to talk about Veterans Affairs, talk about not only medical care but the Veterans Benefits Administration and also the shrines that we have for those veterans that are going to be laid to rest. And again, thank you very much. Again, it's an honor to be here and it's an honor to talk about the Veterans Affairs Department.
And it is a wonderful story. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Alan Pittman, Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Administration and Chief Human Capital Officer at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Once again, that's businessofgovernment.org. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who can't hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.